Jit and Cody, comedians discussing obscure books with witty commentary. Odd books, bizarre books, awful books, oddball books, slightly racist, super racist. Get your fix from Cody and Runjit.
Welcome to Tomfoolery. How you doing, Runjit?
Great. How are you, Cody?
I'm doing great. This is a great episode.
It was a lot of fun.
This is seriously, if you're listening right now, which you are, because if you weren't, you wouldn't hear me talking. This is one of the greatest episodes of this show, in all honesty.
We had a blast.
I had an absolute blast. So for those of you just catching up on the show, this is Tomfoolery. We are, I don't know why I had to say that again. We are reading... we're discussing a book we have previously read that is called The Principles That Govern Social Interaction, which you can find at manhoodacademy.com, but be very
careful.
Thanks
for the plug, Cody.
But Cody's be very plugging. Careful. However, as we say several times during the episode, we highly recommend that you, in fact, download the book only because you really, some of the visuals, you just have to see them. It's just too much not to.
The book is great eye candy. Like, it's just, there's so many great images in it. It's wonderful.
It really is. But it's also a horribly misogynistic book. And we discussed that. So look forward to that. It's going to be fun. And our guest was Stuart Huff, who is a he's an amazing comic. He was voted best in the fest at the Aspen Comedy Festival. He is constantly and consistently considered one of the greatest stand-up comedians living. I would personally say he's one of my favorite comedians, hands down. And there are several other comics I know who would agree with me on that. So if you, as I say in the episode, if you have an opportunity to see Stuart live, I highly recommend that you in fact see him live. He's in Chicago for a week, and so we brought him in. He and I met in Bloomington at the Limestone Comedy Festival, which was a great time as well. And he's a super great guy. And we also, as you will find out in the episode, get along on a lot of weird, odd things that we have in common. So there you go.
I first saw Stuart Huff perform just a few days ago, a few nights ago. Cody, of course, you were on the same bill.
Yes.
This was a show in Chicago.
It was a 100-proof comedy at Comedy Sports.
Yes.
If I can plug.
That's right. And I have to say, it was kind of life-changing for me, actually, watching Stuart perform. I had never seen him perform. I had never heard any of his stuff. Hadn't even seen him on YouTube. And he did an hour. And what really struck me about what he did is I think it transcended stand-up comedy. It was stand-up, it was great stand-up comedy, but it was something more than that. And as I was watching this show and the next few days, as I was thinking about it, it really is causing me now to reevaluate where I am as a stand-up. And it's really challenging me to say, can I do more with my stand-up than what I'm doing now? And when I say do more, I don't even mean necessarily be more successful at it. I just mean what I'm doing with it. Can I do more with it?
Right.
And it's hard for me to say what exactly that would be. But it just really shook up my understanding of what I do as a comic. I think in retrospect now I can say I was at a very comfortable place with my stand-up. Like, I'm very good at this type of stand-up that I do, and so on and so forth. And watching him made me – it just shook up my stand-up world.
Right.
I don't even know where it is right now. It's a scary thing to kind of reevaluate and say, do I want to try something more than what I'm doing? Because I might not succeed at it.
Right.
You know?
But it's a good thing.
It's a good thing.
Especially because even if you end up resettling where you are, at least you actively engaged. Why are you doing the material you're doing?
Yeah.
Which again, oddly enough, harkens back into the episode that we're talking about. And the idea that you need to have your ideas challenged from time to time to know why. Because like a friend of the show and former guest, Peter John Burns, says of Stewart, he's a guy that as a comic, you will see him and then you'll go back home and you'll want to throw out half of your material. And I literally, in fact, actually did throw out a lot of my material after I saw Stewart, mostly because he made me realize that the comedy that I had started doing was very different from the kind of stuff that I really wanted to be doing and had started out doing. And so it's, and I mean, and a lot of that was Stewart. There were some other factors as well, and just kind of that's how you grow. But that's how you have to always be growing as a comic and as a comedian and just as an entertainer or a storyteller or anything. Any artist, you need to be growing. You can't just... We're in a weird art form where we tend to stagnate a lot more than I think a lot of other art forms tend to do. You find your niche. You find the thing you're comfortable with. I mean, because part of it is that we're the closest thing to old vaudeville acts, I guess us and musicians, but like we're constantly doing the same stuff over and over again.
Right.
Especially at like our level, you and I are doing literally the same chunks over and over and over and over and over again because we're not being called upon to do longer time sets. And so why would I do my not as good 8 minutes when I could just keep doing my what I like 8 minutes all the time? Yeah.
Well. So to just amend your earlier note to people to go see Stuart Huff, I think we can also say comedians especially go see Stuart Huff.
It's just a thing you have to do. You know, take the pilgrimage to the mountaintop.
I'm so glad I went to see him.
Yeah. Also, one of the greatest guys ever, just as a person. One of the nicest and just greatest guys ever. This feels weird because now I'm just fawning over Stewart right
it
before
feels
you
weird.
Listen
and
to his episode.
I purposely, by the way, did not tell him that little story of how he changed things for me.
Right.
Because it would have felt weird and fawning. But now that he's not in the room now, we just finished recording the episode a few minutes ago.
So he'll just listen to it later.
He's gone. Now he's probably going to listen to this and hear it, and that's fine.
That's good.
He's not in the room, so I don't feel awkward.
We'll get letters. We'll just get like a nice little handwritten note or something. But anyway, this is Tome Foolery. We are reading Principles That Govern Modern Social something or other. I'm just literally going to call it probably Manhood Academy or Principles, whatever the title of that ended up being, with Stewart Huff.
That's right.
Take
Enjoy.
It away.
Actually, my best friend was wanted to be in the music business, and then went to college for that and became totally disillusioned with what he thought it was versus what the reality was. So then he started just doing various things. I'm going to try this. And he's one of those guys that likes taking things apart and putting them back together.
Yeah.
So he thought, I'm going to sign up for Habitat Humanity and just see. Now he works for a construction company.
Really?
Because he loved it so much. Yeah. So he actually found his path into life, and he still does it, you know, in his free time. But and I just think it's wonderful.
That is awesome. Where does he live?
He now lives back in Atlanta, but his construction company, what they do is they'll send him, like he spent 3 years in Gainesville, Florida, and they built like something down there. He worked on the aquarium in Atlanta.
Oh.
And then he went to Dalton, Georgia and built a prison. And he's trying now to, because it's such a big construction company that they have overseas stuff.
Nice.
So he signed up to go to Bangladesh and help build stuff. And he told me the first day that he volunteered for, you know, Habitat for Humanity, I could see it on his face. We had like lunch the next day and he goes, yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. It
Cody,
really was.
You ready to join in or?
Oh, I'm listening. I've just been here. I just didn't. I didn't have any. The only thing I could think of for Habitat Humanity was about Carter. So I didn't want to. I didn't want to bust into a nice personal story with, oh, here's my political observation about Jimmy Carter. So I just. I was just letting you guys keep going.
That's great. It is life changing, not only for the people who get houses, but for the people who work for Habitat and volunteer for Habitat. And,
yeah,
you know, it really changes a lot of lives.
Let's go ahead for the audience at home. We have Stuart Huff. I almost said like in the garage because I've been listening to Marc Maron too much, but he's in my apartment. Stuart?
We should say in the library.
In the library.
This place. Stuart, isn't it kind of like
in the salon?
It is very much like a library, and I love it. It's there is a beautiful, enormous cat.
Yeah,
with some
the cat is a recurring theme in the show.
Oh,
yeah.
Is that right? Yeah, and a beautiful red piano. Place is loaded with books and war bond posters. And
this is Cody's place.
Cody's place. And that's one of the things when I met Cody. I don't know. We have it's like we're separated at birth or something. Because there's very, very intricate oddities, you know, that we have in common.
Yes, I can attest to this.
Definitely.
Really?
Yes.
And
just off the leg and the shoe alone. For the clarify at the audience at home, Stuart owns a Civil War era wooden leg, and I own a 1950s child's polio brace.
Yeah. I mean, that's enough to build a friendship.
And I looked at Cody was showing us both the polio thing and your bit race, and Stuart was showing us the photo of the Civil War prosthetic leg, and I was thinking, well, these are really cool things for me to look at, but I would never own these. Not in a million years would I ever own these.
See,
these two people actually own these things.
Right, yeah.
And in my head, I was like, man, where could I find a Civil War era wooden leg? Yeah. Like, I was like, I'll get in the car right now. I'll drive down.
Right.
I'll drive down to Georgia if that's where I can get a wooden
leg. Cody
I'll
was actually envious.
I was very, yeah. No, that'd be great.
I was just like, at arm's length, this is kind of a cool thing for me to look at.
Right, yeah. And it's so strange because when I was holding the polio thing, I was thinking, yeah, Stuart, it's an insult to offer money. It's an insult. you don't go into someone's house and start buying their possessions.
See, and that's exactly what we're talking about because you were the first person to have anything similar to that reaction.
Yeah.
Because usually the reaction is, why do you own a child's polio brace? And your question, you not only skipped over why, but you skipped straight to how can I?
Yes, absolutely.
And that's it. That's exactly the point. Yeah.
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 That's the way I feel. I don't like the word need.
Yeah.
I like the word want a lot.
Yeah.
You know? And what a beautiful thing to have. But since I met Cody, we've been talking about these strange things. And even things like one of your dreams of having the parlor and the correct...
Oh, yeah.
You know? And I have a dream of having a room of nothing but taxidermied items. I don't actually kill animals, but once someone else has done evil and mounted them, then I'm going to purchase them.
Yeah. You know? The deed's been done.
The deed's been done.
Yeah.
Not, there's no saving that animal's life at that point.
Right, in a good home. Yeah.
So, and I would love to have a large, like dark wood kind of room with nothing but taxidermy. And whenever you enter the entranceway, you have to put on a smoker's jacket and have a pipe. You know? And then you just think when you're in there.
Yeah.
You talk and think.
And you were referencing, I want to have a grand dining room where you have to wear a dinner jacket.
Mm.
And then there is a separate salon that you retire to after dinner. Right. But then there's a separate exit from the salon so you don't have to go back through the dining room. Because that would just be distasteful.
Impolite.
Yes.
Yeah. I suppose.
See, that is so intricate. And I love that. I told my girlfriend that when I told Cody at dinner the other night about my idea about a taxidermy room. I mean, there was, what, five other people at the dinner? Four other people. And everybody was kind of looking like, well, that's curious. Cody wanted to know what type of jacket I was talking about.
Yeah, I wanted to know specifically the smoking jacket to which you were referring.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And I love that.
That seemed the appropriate follow-up question. I don't see why not. Yeah.
That's the way, like, the polio leg, yeah. Stuart, calm down. Don't be rude
in someone's house. Your first thing you said, Stuart, when Cody gave you that polio shoe with the braces. Mm. Oh, look at this stuff that they covered this shoe with.
Yeah,
you're you were trying to figure out what that was called because you couldn't remember. That's pretty sure you're the first person who's ever said that in response to being shown that.
Definitely. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially like when I when we were at dinner and I was telling Stuart about the collection, because it's the shoe and then there's the War Bonds poster and there's some other things. And I was telling him that it's because I have a collection that I'm trying to grow of innocent struggling in adversity. And his immediate reaction was, oh, let me show you this Civil War wooden leg I have. Because everybody else always goes like, that's what?
Huh?
I mean, I guess if you're going to have a collection, it's going to have a theme. But yeah, Stuart's the only person who's ever bounced an idea back at me.
Yeah.
Of, oh yeah, that resounded within me here. This is my idea. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, and the best part of it for me is, it's not as if a question arose in his mind, but he thought better of it and then just went like no question ever arose.
No.
In his mind in either situation. I'm pretty sure.
Other than jealousy.
Yeah. Other than how can I obtain said item?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah,
that's right.
That's the way you know you've met a connection. You met a friend, right?
Yeah.
There.
No, that's good. Yeah. It's been nice. It's good to feel. It's good to feel less weird, I guess. You
know? Yeah, I assume you very rarely, Cody, do you meet people who share this type of.
Oh yeah,
whatever you would call it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've been talking about books and things as well. And like I told Stuart about how my greatest regret in life is that I didn't pick up. I was in a shop one time and I found. This collection of books that were Scientology manuals, like testing manuals, like how to test when you're at a Scientology center, and I didn't have the cash for them, and so I couldn't purchase them. And most people go like, "Oh, I mean that's a weird like," because I wanted to put them like on my coffee table and just have them as conversation pieces when people come over and they just go, "What's this?" And I'm like, "Oh, you should read it." And, like, you throw a tennis ball against the wall and it makes people think things.
Right.
And Stuart's immediate response was to tell me about the time that he missed out on an opportunity that was similar. And it's like, yeah, that's just it becomes a second nature thing. You just go, "Oh yeah, I could totally see owning that." That's exactly what we're talking about.
But I also know I know the exact feeling. And I, where you have missed an opportunity, mm-hmm. and it sticks with you,
yeah.
And maybe you're on the train, it'll just pop in your head on a Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
Boy, I wish I had those, you know? And so, and I know that feeling. There's probably six or seven items that I could think of right off the top of my head that I regret. Some of them are a decade ago.
Oh, yeah.
And I regret not buying it for whatever reason, you mm-hmm. know? And so I knew exactly what he meant by that.
Yeah. It's a sad day.
Yeah.
Oh man. All right, let's jump right into the book.
Mm-hmm.
It's been so we read Principles 101. That's mm-hmm. pretty much the title of it. It's from the Manhood Academy. For listeners of the show, it's called The Principles. If you download it, it's called Principles 101. It's called The Principles That Govern Social Interaction. That is the full title of the book. It's from Manhood Academy, with special thanks to Dr. LaDice, who brought much needed clarity to this work. Not to spoil anything, but Dr. LaDice should have brought some more clarity to the work.
I'd hate to see it before LaDice came along. Really.
Yeah.
It was just an angry man yelling out of a window.
Well, that's exactly the follow-up sentence in the dedication. Without him, this would still be just a jungle of disjointed ideas. I don't think Dr. LaDice's machete was strong enough to tackle the tangled jungle in which he found himself.
By the way, the Manhood Academy is basically an online school. I put the word school in quotation marks.
Yes.
But this was interesting. Somewhere on their website, so it's online, it's like manhoodacademy.com or something like that. I read on their website something like, "We are the only accredited school for blah, blah, blah."
Wow.
And I was like, what? Accredited by what? Whom? What like, can I get accredited as a school as well?
I'll bet there is probably a footnote back to the original website.
Accredited by Dr. LaDice.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, man. For listeners of the show, this book was recommended to me by Brian Bowden, who was on the second episode of our podcast. He sent this to me in an email a couple of months after doing our show. Not even for tomfoolery. He just knew me well enough that he was like, I think you would enjoy this book. and I held on to it for it because I knew there would be a day where we would do this on the podcast.
Right.
And lo and behold, that day has come.
Well, Cody sent me, when he asked me if I wanted to be on the podcast, which I'm very happy to be here, and he sent me a list of possibilities. Just, here's some things. And he said, well, we're also open to any suggestions from you. And then I was looking through, oh, yeah, that'd be a good, what? Manhood 101. it just jumped out at me. And then I went immediately to, you know, cranked up the old computer and looked and then just wrote Cody at Manhood 101. This is beautiful.
It was a pretty definitive, we're doing this one. This is the choice. Like, I think you said, like, yeah, the other ones are fun, but this, like, it was very easily locked in on, yeah, this is the one we're doing.
Well, you know what? In that case, Stuart, you were establishing order.
I was being dominant.
Yeah,
yes.
That's right.
Oh, God.
And Cody had to submit and be like, okay, we're going to do that.
Yes. It was, there was, I had fear.
Not terror.
No. Terror is
terror
bad.
Is different.
But
than
I had
fear.
And
which
so
is a good thing.
He applied the perfect amount of pleasure and pain required. We are, and for those of you who have not read the book, we are referencing
the ideas from
the book. And to clarify, in case anybody would like to go download the book, which you can do for free on their website, I don't want to increase traffic to their website, but that is where it may be found. We are specifically talking about the section that is called Part One, Identifying the Problem. And then it goes, and then we just did that section, and then we did... where is it? Oh, authority, the proper male form. We did basically the first half of that section.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the sections that we talked about. We did not read the entire book, mostly because, as you will find out, it is rather repetitive. and also because it's a very long book and we're all busy. Let's be honest. Part one, identifying the problem, was fun. Just to jump right into it. Oh, by the way, there are restrictions on use. You have to use it in its entirety or refrain completely from posting or quoting individual isolated passages or content.
Yep. So today, everyone, we're going to have to read the entire book out loud.
Yes.
If we're going to say anything out loud from it.
That is true. Mm. We can't actually quote the book.
Can we TiVo this? Is there any kind of... I mean... I'm considering majority of it as a commercial. Can we skip it?
Oh, man. So I don't even know where to begin on this.
Yeah, it's hard to say. You know what I did? I actually read the sections that that we're going to discuss today,
mm-hmm.
said nothing to my girlfriend, handed it to her, and said, I'll be back in 3 days. Read this.
Read and learn.
Right.
Oh, my God.
And she is, of course, an Italian. She's a Montessori school teacher.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So,
I went to Montessori in Texas. I was in a Montessori school for middle school.
And then you stopped at middle school and then went to private?
Yeah. After middle school. So I didn't go to the high school. We had a high school. I didn't go to that. I went to a different high school.
Yeah,
we were like a pilot pro. Our school was the pilot program for middle school and high school Montessori.
Hmm.
Ooh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was weird.
The one in Athens, Georgia, which is where I live now, mm-hmm. stops at before high school. So after middle school, it stops.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will say that's probably smart. Because my friends that went to the high school, I'm not calling anybody out in case anybody listens to it or anything. Mm-hmm. From what I understand, it is sometimes not the best in high school.
Hmm.
Also, a lot of my friends who went there really felt like they were completely unprepared for college once they got there after going through high school in a Montessori program because it was too loose.
Right.
And so it completely unprepared them for the structure of college. And also they felt like they didn't learn a lot that they needed to know for college.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
I have, I don't know a whole lot about Montessori, mm-hmm. but I've been dating this girl since December. So what is it now? What is that? 6-7 months?
Mm-hmm.
I don't, bad at math. Yeah. So I've just learned from her. Well, you know, the history of Montessori, you know, we've mm-hmm. had conversations about it and I've mm-hmm. been to the school and kind of seen, so I'm just barely touching you know, Montessori. But I think it, I can see that definitely, where as a child, I like the structure of it, but then you the lack of structure of it,
right,
in a way. And then you need, if you're going to end up going to college, you need to get
right
structure.
Right.
Yeah, it's probably too much of a switch, you know,
right, yeah,
from Montessori high school, well, to college.
I think it works great in elementary. I even start getting wary of it in middle school, especially having gone to a middle school of it. And also, and I've talked to people, and some of them say that my middle school experience was different from what they understand Montessori to be. But because, like, the person that was the head of our school spoke at the UN on behalf of, like, Montessori. So I go off of that as being kind of representative just because of it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, they would punish us as a group for somebody doing something,
right,
which is a Montessori foundation. Mm-hmm. But in middle school, it falls apart because you've got people with hormones that are going crazy, and so they start not caring about everybody else,
yeah,
which is what's normal in middle school. So you would have people who would actively choose to go away from the group, and so then they would screw it up for everybody. So, like, mm-hmm, we spent an hour one time just standing outside waiting for one kid to stop talking because the teachers refused to discipline that specific person,
mm-hmm,
because we were supposed to take care of each other as a community. But it's like, well, yeah, but he's going through his own thing right now, and there's nothing that we can do. So we stood there for an hour outside, yeah, in Texas. Just
which
waiting.
Is a strange, and I know what you're talking about, the discipline as a group. They mm-hmm do that in my girlfriend's school, too. And it's a strange thing because then they stress individuality so hard.
Right.
And then yet, when it comes to punishment, it is a group thing.
Right.
Which, you know, but I guess there is no system that is perfect. But I,
of course,
yeah, I can definitely see how, if you're going to go on, I know there's a couple of colleges, I think one's in Seattle, that have no grades, no discipline. Mm-hmm. It's you follow your own path.
Right.
If you were
Evergreen,
to go.
Evergreen, is that what? I think Evergreen State, I think.
That sounds like that. Right.
Washington,
yeah,
that does sound
might,
right.
That might be the one.
I mean, Brown's even kind of like that. Brown's very loose.
Really?
Over in Rhode Island, yeah. Like, they have, you can create your own major and everything like that.
I think.
Right.
Yeah,
I almost went to, Brown was one of the schools I was looking at going to because of that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I think if you're going to go through Montessori, from the little bit I know about it, you need to continue it,
right,
to the end. You,
right,
if you switch and then, you know, it's, I think it would completely throw me off,
mm-hmm,
you know, to go from this lack of structure to this rigid structured system.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So what did your girlfriend think of the book?
She texted me. Yeah. It was hilarious. She texted me and said, why? Question mark. That was beautiful.
That
was beautiful.
Because you had given her no context.
No,
right?
I handed it to her. I said, I love you very much. I'll be back in 3 days. Said, read this. And she is, for background, she's a Montessori school teacher. Mm. She grew up in Macon, Georgia,
okay,
in what I would consider an oppressive, masculine-dominated household.
Okay.
She is now out from under that. You know, but she is definitely not, she would not consider herself a, quote, feminist. She's not a radical. She believes in equality. So, mm-hmm, yes, all the stuff, but she's not a militant kind of feminist.
Right.
So I wanted to see what would come out of her mouth. And most of it was just laughter. Most of it was, she was calling me saying, you've got to listen to this. and just reading stuff. And ever since I gave it to her, then we will joke back and forth. I will say, I'm allowing you to know that I am back at the hotel room now.
I've also,
you know,
I've also got to imagine that, like, that because she's been dating you for a while, you've probably brought home weird stuff in the time that you've been together. So it's not like you are the quote unquote average Joe, and then you handed her this book for a particular thing. It's like, you know, like we were discussing my book, Take Your Choice: Separation or Mongrelization, because I was a rhetoric major and I own a bunch of weird books like that.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody were dating me and they knew that that's the kind of thing I owned, and then I came home and I was like, hey, read this book. I just bought this book. It was written by Ernst Röhm. You know, and they're like, they wouldn't be like, why do you have a book by that? They'd be like, oh, okay, well, let's see what's going on here.
Right,
you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
Eventually, there's a little bit of a padding of like, okay, Stewart sometimes just finds weird things.
Yeah, if she was going to be offended, but just surely on the fact that I gave this to her, then we wouldn't have made it through December.
Right. You know? Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I had some taxidermied possum arms with me on our the first time she came over.
Man, so. If I had a dime for every time someone had said that in my apartment.
You would have 10 cents. Arms.
Which I don't,
to
we,
your name.
We could cut this out, but it's true. I met a guy in Michigan who his job is to pick up roadkill.
Yeah.
That's his job. He wants to pay for his daughter's wedding by taxidermying the roadkill that he finds. So, like, if a possum is hit, and this reason, I don't know, we might want to cut this out because it's a tad graphic, but if a possum is hit and the front part of the possum is damaged, then he will taxidermy the rear of the possum. Yeah. And sometimes there's just an arm left, Cody. What can I tell you? And
so, so does he just have a sign over his door that says taxidermying all comers? This is just...
I met him at a junk shop, and we were both looking at this taxidermy thing. And if you're going to keep this in, I want it known that I don't kill animals. I have a big problem with that. Once the evil's been done, it's open season. At this point, I'll buy it, you know.
So... Okay.
See, what, and again, what, and again.
Rational questions see, coming. Well, rational.
But again, I'm just making jokes about does he have a sign that has above his door, and Runjit's over here trying to process what's happening.
Yes. See, this is rational questions coming, which they need to be.
So I think the conclusion I'm drawing from that story is that you then purchased two opossum arms.
I got very excited.
Is that true?
It is absolutely true. I okay. It's 100% true. I met this man and he started telling me this. He's going to try to pay for his daughter's wedding with these things. And I said, "What are you taxidermy?" And he said, "Whatever part is still good." And I said, "Holy moly. That is fantastic.
This is your kind of guy,
yes.
Stuart."
Yes.
This is exactly the type of Stuart loved that man, I assure you, everyone.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Let's see. Let's just give a rundown. Possum butt I have on my wall. Raccoon butt.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Coyote. Raccoon butt. Coyote butt. I think 9 different just arms. Possum arms. Oh, raccoon arms. You know,
are they how structurally sound are they?
They're pretty good. I have a photo of the possum.
Like you should like I feel like those are just like coat hangers waiting to happen. Like if you mounted the arm coming out of the wall and then you could just like hang things on them.
I'll say this: it could definitely hold a hat.
Okay,
that if you're gonna put a winter coat, I don't know if it would do it. But
oh my god! Okay, so Stuart is showing me the possum rear.
Can we please somehow post that?
Yeah, yes. We'll put it on the Facebook.
Oh,
if you can send this,
my.
If you can mail this to me,
I think I have the raccoon one here too.
We will post this on the Facebook. Oh, I'd love to see the raccoon. I love raccoons.
Yeah, there's the raccoon.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
These will be posted. I assure you.
We'll post these on
kind
the Facebook.
Kind of to my horror.
Yeah, and that's the reason I. You know, and it is an odd, I don't know if you want to see it.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man, that's amazing.
It's his daughter's wedding. I wanted to help.
Of course, you know, it's a good cause.
Yeah. So, so back to what we were talking about. This is the type of stuff I'm into. So when I handed her this, I knew there was not going to be any judgment towards me.
Right.
About it.
Right.
But I
or at least there would be trepidation, like... Okay, let's hear him out. You know, like she's not going to just immediately jump to a conclusion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see, I thought it would be very interesting for us to get her perspective.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Know? And she was not upset at all. She thought it was hilarious. There was some of the things in there that she agreed with. Usually the beginnings of sentences.
Reasonable. Premise, reasonable. Conclusion, holy shit.
Right.
That's
basically
Well, because that's kind of the trick of the book is he uses a lot of like examples that are either completely generalized to the point where it's like, well, okay, yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Or so specific that it's like, well, yeah, in that one case, you are correct. You know, that's a broken clock rings right twice a day. Like, you know, he'll use an example of a moment and you'll go, well, yes, I concede that that moment occurred. And then he'll then generalize it to the point where it's like, and then this is the conclusion about life. And it's like, well, no, you can't, just because when you knocked the glass of water off of your desk, it didn't spill all over everything. That doesn't mean that every time that happens, it happens like that.
Yeah. He does that constantly. Whoever wrote this, assuming it's a guy.
I think it's safe to say it's a man.
Right. And he'll start with a general statement like, all societies must help each other in order to survive. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's unarguable. You know, no one's going to say we're all individuals and we'll fight it out until there's one left. That's a statement. And then he'll start there and end up with why women cannot be firemen. And somewhere along the way, it's just, where did you go, buddy?
Right.
What happened?
Well, he does a lot of generalizations, too, that are just also where he's assuming, and that's what makes it bad scholarly writing, which upsets me, I think, sometimes more than the actual argument, is that he's just writing it poorly. He makes assumptions that he is assuming we all automatically agree with.
Yeah.
Like, he says things that are opinions or things that I don't even recognize as a societal thing, as if he's saying, well, everybody has hair in some capacity. You know, like, he'll say it in that kind of a way. Like he'll say that women want to be independent, but then they also bemoan the fall of chivalry. And I've never really actually heard, like, women, especially feminists, bemoan the fall of chivalry.
No.
I've also never had feminists demand that men pay for dinner all the time or anything like that.
Nope.
And he claims that all feminists still want men to always pay for dinner and everything. I very rarely actually even hear any ladies automatically assume that men are going to always pay for dinner.
I think that's a dead concept.
I really do. Yeah. And I completely agree.
I think that you could be on a date with a woman and offer to pay, and she might accept and might not.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it might be something where you know, I pay, and then you bought the movie, so let me take care of, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he does it. It's like, to use what we've been talking about, Cody and I have these interesting fascinations to just assume that everybody does is that's our fault. You have to go in knowing that I'm the odd one.
Right. Exactly. You know? Yeah. I don't go, you know? I don't say things like, well, we all carry handkerchiefs, so we just have to assume that, you know, the
Cody
people
doesn't
that don't
say, hey, let's compare your fan with mine.
Yeah. Right. This is my hand fan. What does your hand fan look like?
Wait,
yeah.
You don't have one?
Yeah.
Wait, did you forget it?
You know, and there are things that
is
don't
it in
and
the
like,
shop?
And there are things that like doesn't that don't make sense to me in terms of why people don't, but I don't assume that everybody is thinking that. I don't assume that everybody's going like, oh, you know, we all need to wear vests at all times in order, you know,
right.
What was that? The other day I apologized to somebody for my state of undress because I unbuttoned one of my buttons. I was like, I'm sorry, I'm really hot. Do you mind if I just kind of unbutton? And they're like, what are you talking about? I was like, I just didn't want to be rude. And just unbutton a button.
And it's important for you to be aware of that.
Right.
It's self-awareness.
Exactly, yeah.
It's just pure self-awareness. I'm aware that, well, I'm a smoker. You know, I smoke cigarettes. And I'm always, you know, I forgot to get gum when I pulled in because now I'm worried about, you know, I know my clothes stink like, and just self-awareness, basic self-awareness, you know. Mm-hmm. But reading through this, I picture one very angry guy that is attracted to one, model, and he's mad at her. And he's, but he makes statements about all females.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's picturing one woman.
Right.
You know?
And he blows the entire book out of the water in the very beginning of the book because he explains how all men have this weird neuroses where they feel like they have to kowtow to women all the time and that they're worried about constantly upsetting women and all of that. And then he goes, and I'm going to just read the section here, even though I was specifically told by the book not to. It's titled, "This is Where I Got My Neuroses," and it has a, or neurosis, and it has a picture of a man cowering in a corner, and it says,
the pictures are awesome.
The pictures are fantastic. The pictures
are wonderful. The
book is worth looking at just for the pictures.
I totally agree.
It's a great picture book. And this is, and I'm quoting, "My mom did her best to raise me, but she had," and then in bold, "no fucking clue how to do it. Since my father's too scared to stand up to her, she's been ruling over both of us for years. This has gradually reduced me to a neurotic mess, cowering under my own self-censorship. I am terrified of being criticized by the world and not living up to its expectations." And then it end quotes for some reason, even though I never saw a begin quote for it. But there we go. Yeah, and he's, and that's under the, suddenly it felt like a dam had broken inside of me, a pent up flood of realization came pouring out. This is where I got my neurosis. And so, and then it goes, but why? Why do you feel like you must constantly monitor yourself? Why do you treat women as if they are better than you? Why does talking to people seem like such a massive chore?
Right. And he goes on to talk about how horrible self-help books are and how they don't work.
Yep.
But this is the same rhetoric that a self-help book uses, is just categorizing everything down to you.
Well, yeah, that really struck a chord with me because he specifically puts down what he calls pickup artists, right? And yet, really, that's kind of what this book is. I mean, the title is misleading, I think. The principles that govern social interaction. But what this really is, it's a guide for heterosexual males on how to get laid, basically.
Right,
right, right.
That's really what it is,
yeah.
Even though he says those guides are bullshit.
Yeah, you know? I mean, yeah. It exactly portrays it. And to clarify, that was a quote from a man named James that he was using. That's the whole, what that whole section is. But it's used to show, as I said earlier, he takes one example and then he goes, "See, this is how everybody thinks. Mm. We all have this problem." And for the heterosexual point, yeah, because later, he has a picture of 500 Days of Summer, the Joseph Gordon-Levitt movie, and he's replaced summer with faggotry. So if there was concern or confusion over what he meant by manhood, even though it is never explicitly, as far as what we read, and granted we didn't read everything in this book, but I didn't see any sections that were labeled like homosexuals and why they also are women or something like that.
Yeah, I think he mentions it once, if I remember, where he basically lumps homosexuals in with women, but it's from reading through it, homosexuals don't exist in his mind.
Right.
This is a man versus a woman and how we are going to get her to sleep with us.
Exactly.
You know, yep. He constantly talking about women fulfilling our needs, which in his mind is pure sex.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's it. You know,
mm-hmm.
The grocery cart example that he gives in the beginning of the passage you were just reading.
Oh, yeah.
To me is a great example of just, there's several options that could be valid, and he picks the one that he feels like it is and eliminates all the rest and then includes all of us into his one thing. You know, he has a grocery cart. He's pulling it out. There's if I remember correctly, there's a mother and a daughter. Mm-hmm. They're kind of standing near him, mm-hmm. looking, in his words, like looking at me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can already feel the anxiety. And then he does not give them the cart, which he just assumes is the reason they're waiting. His mother says to him, "I raised you better than that."
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. And then mm-hmm. he tries to defend the action. But there's many different things that could have happened there. He's saying, this is what happened. And he's even speaking for these people that did not speak to him. And then he's including all men. This is the reason we are like that.
Exactly. And he's including all women.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
And all women.
This woman obviously wanted me to, thought I should give her this cart. Right. And that's what all women think.
All women think that men should be standing there handing them groceries.
Right.
Carts.
Oh, and one of my favorite parts, because we're talking about sex and the idea of like that women are basically a tool for sexual pleasure for men and then subservience. Under women shielded from sexual accountability, he says, and I'm quoting, "Feminists often lament the emergence of a quote-unquote rape culture, supposedly perpetuated by men. Yet no feminist is willing to hold women accountable for their systematic exploitation of male sexuality in strip clubs." across the world. On a daily basis, women are allowed to use their bodies to defraud men out of their hard-earned money, while women fault men for not being able to control their biological urges. They have no conscience about manipulating the male sex drive to fill their own bank accounts.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Strip clubs are a female-designed tool to extort money from men.
Yeah.
Is essentially his argument.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A couple of sentences further, just to continue this and make it even worse, says, this is especially hypocritical considering that feminists try to absolve women of blame whenever a scantily dressed female is raped.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then the next sentence after that is, women fail to see the connection between their behavior and its consequences, which he's obviously referring to being raped.
Mm-hmm.
The consequences being raped.
This whole section is about how women are asking for rape by dressing the way. Basically, he says almost explicitly, well, if you're going to spend all that money on makeup and looking nice, then why don't you want to be raped? Is essentially what he postulates,
which is a classic, old school.
Oh yeah,
argument. But the thing that I found, I don't want to use the word interesting, obnoxious about it, is he's not even mentioning like thongs or very, very, very extreme dress. He's not saying a woman goes outside topless. He's mentioning things like makeup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean,
this is basic attire.
Yeah.
You know, he's in a way he's saying if you go outside, you need to be in a burlap sack. And if you're not and you get raped, it is your fault.
Right.
You know.
Women by existence are sexual pleasure beings, essentially. That just the female form is in of itself sexually fulfilling in a visual way. And so by having any of that on display of any kind, you're asking for some sort of sexual interplay. Just like, well, he also, my favorite thing, and this is something that I've gotten in actual fights with people about, was the section about money equals sex, feminism equals fraud, about the idea, he quotes somebody, just because a man bought you a lobster doesn't mean you need to reciprocate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's this whole, and I've gotten in actual fights with guys about this, where they believe that, well, she accepted a drink, she should then sleep with me. And it's like, no, like, the acceptance of the drink, I'll give you that the acceptance of the drink usually symbolizes I'm interested, at least, you know, in terms of like, come over and talk. Like, I would be a little thrown off because I've had this happen in a gay club a couple of months ago. I bought a drink for a guy that I thought was flirting with me, and then he turned out to be straight. He, in my mind, shouldn't have accepted the drink in a gay club when I'm a gay man, or at least should have made it a point. Because I basically asked him, hey, let me get you a drink. What do you drink? And he just told me, and it should have been a thing where he should have kind of said, oh, by the way, I'm straight, before getting the drink. I would have probably still bought him the drink, but it would have been nice to have known. But I also don't take that to the high level of, well, then he should have, like, he should sleep with me, or like, you know, he should have put out, like, I didn't get that angry. I did feel hurt, but that's also because I'm a gay man in a gay club who had a straight guy basically use him for a drink, kind of. But men feel that way in bars, where it's like, well, I bought her a drink and then she accepted the drink, and then we talked for a bit, and then she gave me her number, but like, we didn't have sex. And it's like, well, yeah, like, just because you buy somebody dinner doesn't mean that they have to sleep with you at the end of it. Like, that's part of the date.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, maybe I'm hanging out with the wrong people. know anybody who would buy a woman a drink and then expect some sort of sexual
expect it as being owed.
Right. Like there's a barter system at play.
If that was the way life worked, then I would just go to Long John Silver's and buy a whole lot of food. I would be handing it out to women
just
on
like,
the streets.
Here you go,
man. You know?
Yeah.
Sorry, I know you got to go to work, but there's a two fish dinner. I mean, you know?
Where do you want to go?
Right. I mean, well, that's ridiculous.
Like, he also says that like women are taught that they can lie with no consequences. And one of his examples of that is when a woman gives you a fake number.
Mm.
And it's like, well, yeah, because you also sound like the kind of guy who probably badgers women at bars.
Yeah.
To the point where they want to get rid of you, so they will give you a fake number.
And because there's a thing called sexual assault exactly. that happens a lot.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it's like his entire it's so hard to like look at the book from anything else than like a man's personalized rants.
Yes.
Because all of his perspective, well, first of all, this entire book is just perspective.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing he tries to. It's a book that is written backwards. He wrote a book, and then he decided to try and find as many quote unquote examples as he could to back up anything he had already said. It's not written from an actual idea this is the science behind.
Yeah, well, it's written starting with the conclusion, basically.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Right. I got it.
Which is an assumption.
Yeah. And it's a repetitive assumption. And mm-hmm. so the problem is that he looks at the world through his perspective, and his perspective is that he feels he's entitled to things, and then when he doesn't get them, he thinks it's a conspiracy theory. He thinks that there's some sort of conspiracy. Why won't women date me? There has to be a reason, because I'm doing all of this. But the problem is the catch-22 of they're not dating you because you're acting this way.
You're acting this
but
way.
But you think that you acting this way is correct, and there's a conspiracy for why that's not happening the way you want it to.
Yeah. Is this, we talked about the pictures, isn't this the exact section we're talking about, that wonderful diagram where he has the money, and then he has the woman, and is that...
Yeah, it's a house, a wedding ring, a bag of food, a champagne flute, and flowers. And it's an arrow going to the right and an arrow going to the left on top of each other. And then it's a woman in underwear with her butt towards the camera.
Yeah.
And then below it, and that's money equals sex. And then below it, it's feminism equals fraud. And it's the same house ring thing. And then to the right, it's a green arrow. And to the left, it's a red arrow. And on the right, it just says in red, quote, thanks, end quote.
If that was a poster, I would buy it. That's so fantastic. Could you imagine thinking in those terms? What? Money equals woman with her butt in the air.
Yeah,
it makes no sense.
Well, and the thing under money equals sex, it says means to provide parentheses caring in parentheses equals gratitude for provision parentheses caring in parentheses under feminism and fraud means to provide caring and then does not equal no sex, no caring.
So
which actually doesn't make any sense because it should be equals no sex, no caring. His even his algebra is off because that's what he's saying is that it equals no sex.
That's amazing.
That makes no sense.
Yeah.
Did either of you notice or find the quote movie on YouTube that's produced by them?
Oh, no, I forgot to. I don't even know if I could sit through it.
I watched it. It's about 27 minutes.
Oh, okay. No. Okay.
And it's on YouTube in three parts. Here's a quote from the movie that I thought you guys would enjoy. It might be a tad confusing because the opening thing is a quote, like there it's in quotation marks. So let me try to read it. Honey, I need you to be there for me in this relationship. That's a quote. Is a very bad expectation. It's vague. It doesn't tell her anything about how to meet your needs specifically. Open quote. Honey, I want you to wash these dishes, fold these socks, and then come over here and suck this cock. Close quote, is a great expectation because it's very specific.
Oh, no.
It tells your girlfriend or wife exactly what to do to meet your needs.
Oh, no.
End of quote.
Oh, no.
Holy moly.
So
no.
Let's see. How many of you want to say that? Go home and say that. Are you going to, Stuart, will you?
I would go home and say that to my girlfriend, and she would go, as soon as I finish pressing your shirts, then I will get on that list. And then she would walk outside. Like,
because she's read the book. She understands.
Right. Yeah. She would think it was hilarious.
Oh, my God. I have never been happier to be gay than right now. I just don't have to deal
That's
with
fantastic.
This.
And that, man. To me, that is one of the major things in this book. Is I would like to meet the woman that's actually mad about this book's existence.
Yeah.
Because this thing is so ridiculous and so out there that I don't see how you could even take this seriously.
It occurred to me as I was reading it, this would be like a great satirical thing. Like, this would work.
Oh, yeah.
And the movie, too, if you get a chance, watch it. It's 27 minutes. It's great satire, although unintended.
Right.
Right. It would be a neat, like, comic book. You know? It really would. It would be hilarious. It sounds so absurd.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have met some men that I consider, just ridiculous and sexually driven. Never met anybody like this. Ever.
I'm pretty sure... I'm not friends with, but I'm pretty sure I went to college with a couple people like this because I went to the University of Texas, and there are definitely some old school people, like guys. I'm pretty sure a couple of people that I knew tangentially were like this. Maybe not to this extreme, but definitely in that kind of like, oh no, the man's the boss of the house and you have to give explicit instruction to the woman. I mean, like a friend of mine one time was telling me as if it wasn't a weird thing about how his mom had an allowance and had to like ask permission to go do stuff outside of the house.
Oh, God.
Like his father veto her decisions on leaving the house.
Wow.
Like she could like literally could not physically leave the house except to go to the grocery store unless he gave explicit permission to allow her to.
Wow.
And he didn't think it was that weird. He was telling like a weird story that had happened revolving around that, but that in and of itself was not weird. What was weird was like this particular situation. Like it was a conversational weirdness, right. Not, hey, it's a weird thing that my dad won't let my mother leave the house sometimes. Like, yeah. It was like, oh yeah, this one time she wanted to go do this, and he said, no, you can't, and she went, oh, but come on. Like, it was like, that was the story. It was such a weird moment. We were, like, it was a group of us, and we were all just like, what?
Yeah, see, like, the girl I'm dating now grew up in Macon, Georgia, a male-dominated household. There were two, she's the only, wait a minute, yeah, three females in the house, and I think four or five boys. And there was a thing, and I was blown away by this, but it's very common if the men are watching football or at any point if the men are eating dinner, that when their glass was empty they would just shake the ice. And my girlfriend or her mother would get up and fill the drinks. If you were in your room studying, doing homework, and you heard ice shaking in the house, she would just go to see where it was.
Wow.
And fill the drink. That blew my mind. But to me, even that kind of ridiculous macho crap is not near what we're talking about
here.
Oh,
yeah, no.
This man sees all women as they need to be filling his sexual needs.
Right.
You know, and they're not.
Well, he compares them constantly and consistently with children. And
I
with
have
the
that
idea
written
that
down.
They
yeah.
don't know what's best for them.
Yeah, on five different pages in the small parts we read, he compares women directly to children.
Oh yeah. Like he says, like there's a part where he says you don't let your children drive a car. Like they're people, but they don't have the ability or like the mental consciousness to be able to actually drive a car.
Yeah.
And he compares that to why you don't let women into politics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a very direct comparison.
Direct comparison.
It's children are not competent to make decisions. Women are the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's...
Oh, like, yeah. Well, here, wait, there's a... let me get to that. There was a section that I had highlighted that was one of my favorites in the back. And so this is in that back end where we're talking about the pleasure pain, how to control a woman situation going on, where he talks about how women are not soldiers or CEOs.
Well, at one point he says, and I actually quoted this in my notes, he says, allowing women to vote is no different than allowing children to govern themselves.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. I've never met a man like that. I've met disgusting, macho, kind of in it for the sex men. I've never met anybody that has taken it to this ridiculous length.
Yeah.
You know?
What's interesting about that quote is that that one came out of nowhere. Like, he never in this book talks about voting except in that sentence.
Right.
And you're like, what? That took me aback even while reading this book.
Yeah.
That sentence was like, whoa.
That's exactly. And I immediately turned around and wrote it down. Yeah. It was just like, what?
Yeah,
now you're on to voting?
And then he doesn't say anything more about it.
I don't have a whole chapter about how women should not be allowed to vote and about how the start of the downfall was when
the women's suffrage movement,
you know, and all, but no, he sums it all up with one sentence. Boom.
Thesis statement, bam.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is the whole part. Like children, women allow their unstable emotions to dictate their perspective. They lack the necessary discipline. And he also cites a Time.com article on that particular sentence. Mm. They lack the necessary discipline to arrive at rational, objective conclusions, especially when their self-esteem is threatened. The disturbing amount of false rape accusations made by women each year confirms this fact. In each case, and then skipping ahead, in each case, a woman's feelings about her self-esteem superseded telling the truth. Thus, by virtue of necessity, men must take charge. Men must work in the most dangerous and demanding jobs because they are the only ones with the physical and mental capacity to do so. Police, soldier, firefighter, construction worker, scientist, engineer, CEO, and president are all male-dominated professions for good reason. Women can't competently meet the physically and mentally demanding nature of these duties. Because men perform these duties, women gain protection from rape and slavery.
That's just crazy.
Yeah.
I guess it is a good thing that I'm assuming that the men in this room think this is crazy.
Yes.
This is insane
behavior.
And it doesn't even make logical sense. You know, like, if it was 1920, then maybe there would be more people that would agree with this kind of crap.
To play devil's advocate, because this is what we did when we did the Nazi book about how homosexuals started the Nazi Party. And this is my rhetorical stance. I always try and give as much rhetorical credence and clearance to the other opposition as I can, because for me, if I give them as much credibility as possible and their argument still falls apart, then it's like it's all the more better for my side.
Sure.
There is an argument that can be made in the front half of those jobs. When he's talking about police, firefighter, soldier, construction worker, the physically demanding ones, there is an argument that can be made where it's like, yes, because of smaller stature, physicality, sometimes those can be harder. I'm not saying I agree with them, but there is actually a debate that could be actually held on those. The minute he starts going scientist, an engineer, CEO, and president, where those are not physically demanding jobs,
no,
that immediately throws everything out of the window.
The minute he added the word mentally, because you could, what you're saying is there can be an argument made on the physically part,
right?
Yeah,
men who are not physically able to be firefighters.
I'm raising my hand.
I am as well.
Yeah,
I wanted to work in the FBI on the psychology standpoint, where like because I used to this will be no surprise to anybody. I used to like research serial killers a lot when I was a kid because I was really obsessed with abnormal psychology, and so I wanted to work for the FBI on that side of just doing the kind of the mental stuff I'm working with serial killers. But in order to do that, you have to be an FBI field agent for at least 2 years. And there's no way I could pass even getting the test to get into being a field agent.
Right.
Regardless of even
the physical
then being,
part
of it. Yeah. Like you had to do like running exercises and stuff. And I was like, oh, I have asthma. There's no way I'm going to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I could never be a soldier or a firefighter. I'm actually I have physical limitations that would keep me from being drafted. So,
well, this is the part that my girlfriend who read it said, you know, she said, I could not be a firefighter.
Mm.
She said, but I mean, there are examples of women that could do the job physically.
Oh yeah,
very well.
Oh yeah,
and there's examples of men who could not. So exactly. Blanket statements, it just ridiculous.
Right.
But if you want to say, you know, if you want to say, women, most women physically could not meet the standards needed for a firefighter. Okay.
Yeah.
There's an argument to be made.
Yeah, and if you want to say a smaller proportion of women could meet that than the
right.
proportion of men, that's probably true.
Yeah. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
And like that was the whole thing with homosexuals in the military was like, yeah, you can't have them because they're weaker, and so then you're going to have soldiers that are going to have to carry weaker homosexual men through battle. And it's like, you don't know a lot of homosexuals, do you? Like, or the ones you've just made friends with a very specific type of homosexual. Because like, I know some really butch homosexuals mm-hmm. that would really easily conquer another country if they wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's these weird ideas of you're only specifically thinking about a type of person.
Yeah, and that's the reason I think I said earlier that, like, you just said, you don't know a lot of homosexuals. No, the statement's not made from actual
mm-hmm.
Knowledge. It's just a general, description of homosexuals when you're not actually... No, and that's what I feel like in this book. I kept feeling like there's one angry, unattractive, small, aggressive, horny man.
Yeah.
Sitting alone in an apartment who is pissed off
mm-hmm.
at one woman.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Who probably there was an interchange where he went, "Hi," and she went, "What?" And then that was it.
Oh, my God. I love that origin story.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Oh, and I'm like, and speaking of posters that we would own if they were posters, my favorite, one of my other favorite diagram ones is the work dating government winner loser one. It has a bathroom outline of a man and a bathroom outline of a woman. And then it says work at the top with a factory, and it has two red arrows going, and it says paycheck and paycheck above mm-hmm. both the male and the female. Then there's a blue arrow that says dating, and it's going from the man to the woman with money. And then it has purple arrows going down to government from the man, and then going over to from government to the woman with money. And then it says winner under the lady and male and loser under the male, basically saying that women make money from both work or from work, dating, and government. And men only make their money from work and then have to give it to the government and the woman for dating.
Right.
Because he makes the argument that because men pay for everything on dates because of chivalry that is demanded of them from feminists for some reason, that women make two paychecks.
Yeah.
And then this one, he's also arguing that then the government, through social actions. He also refers to the Council on Women and Women and Girls. I forget the exact name for it, that Obama started through an executive order in 2009.
Yeah,
he refers to it as unconstitutional, which it is not. It is not unconstitutional.
Right.
There's not even – he's literally the only person making that argument, because even – I looked it up because I was like, let's just look at the constitutionality of that. It's part of a department, so it's not like he created a whole new department. You can do that in an executive order. But not only that – other men's rights groups are just trying to fight for him creating a council on men and boys. That's the most they're doing. There's not even another men's rights group that's trying to argue it was unconstitutional. No
right.
one's arguing it's unconstitutional except for this guy. And he just blatantly throws out the term unconstitutional without any support or any idea of constitutionality whatsoever.
Yeah.
The Constitution doesn't even directly talk about this at all. I've read it several times.
But what you're missing is he has a picture next to it. I don't know where the proof you're looking for is non-existent. There was a picture next to it of Obama taking his shirt and it said,
this
the new face of feminism.
This is what a feminist looks like.
This is what a feminist looks like. So
you're right.
I don't know why you actually did further research.
I'm sorry.
It was
that should have covered it for me. I can't believe I was wrong.
Also, he refers to Obama as an emasculated male.
Yes, he does.
Because Michelle talks occasionally, I guess, is his point of view on it. Occasionally, they let Michelle talk. I also like how he try so hard to be politically neutral by including both pictures of Hillary Rodham Clinton and Sarah Palin when talking about what the term bitch really means.
Right.
Well, he has a bullet pointed list,
and I will read that list for you now.
What do we mean by bitch?
The term bitch refers to a repugnant or difficult woman. Bitch characteristics include anger toward men, condescending attitude, emotionally unstable, unreasonably demanding, self-serving, stubborn, and argumentative.
And then four pictures of various,
it is Paris Hilton,
quote, bitches.
Paris Hilton, bitches, yes. Sarah Palin, Hillary Clinton, and I don't even know
woman.
Who that last one is. I think she's an actress or an athlete of some kind. But yeah, that's. Oh, there's also a picture of Thelma and Louise's car going off the cliff above this.
That's great.
He does this at one point he says there's some kind of thing. Most of the footnotes in here are from back to his website, but occasionally.
Did you follow any of those by chance? Because I did occasionally.
I one or two, and then I got tired of it.
Yeah.
You know, but occasionally he'll quote an actual source and then footnote that. But what at least 90% of them are just back to the website. But,
and on the website, when you follow most of those, it goes back to forum posts that he has posted that are anecdotal at best.
Yeah.
Like one of the ones I followed was literally him just talking to a person about their opinion. And he had cited that.
Yeah. So he's citing himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's backing up his point with his point.
Exactly.
Yeah. Fascinating. But he says, like, there's one part where he says that women actually in a poll rated that drinking the recommended daily allowance of water is more important than sex.
I saw that.
And he's using that to prove that women aren't giving us what we need. But then the poll was actually opinions on healthy living. They wanted to make a list of what is important with healthy living. And sex was on the list, which shocked me that it was even on there. So women are horrible bitches because drinking the daily recommended allowance of water is more important to your health status than having sex.
I mean, that's the thing is like really early in rhetoric, when you're learning rhetoric, you immediately become distrustful of statistics and polls because your immediate question, like anytime I watch anything political and they go, well, this poll shows this. I'm like, what was the question that they were asked? Because it's all about how you phrase the question. You can't just show somebody a poll and go, more Americans approve of this than the other thing. It's like, well, how did you phrase the question?
Yeah.
Right.
Like, because if you just ask, like, because even just asking, do you like gay marriage? People will go, do I like it? No. You know, or something like that. But they may not be against it. But they might go, oh, no, I don't like it or something. But then if you ask the follow up, do you think it should be banned? They go, oh, no, I'm religiously against it. But I think they should be allowed to get married.
Right.
So it's always the way you phrase the question that gets the poll you want. You can get any statistic you want just by phrasing it. And in this, he's not even blatantly doing that. He's literally just using an arbitrary poll. Oh, man. Well, I mean, that goes back to the whole he's made an argument and he's going to find what he needs to back that up.
Mm-hmm.
Which I like. I got in a and not to get too into a controversial subject, but like I got into a debate with a friend of mine who is a creationist and was talking about how he doesn't believe science because science takes an answer and then tries to find support to back it up. Like science already knows what it wants to have the answer be, and then it uses its support to back it up. And I was like, that's my problem with creationism, though, because you're taking, well, this is the Bible, so we need to find all of the science that proves the Bible correct.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, science does it the opposite way.
It's called the scientific method.
Right, where they find something and then they try to figure out what that means.
Yeah.
They're not just finding, scientists don't wake up in the morning and go, today I'm going to prove that rocks are made of this, and then trying to go find it. But we both had entirely opposite opinions of what the other side was doing, and both of us thought that the other side had an answer already in place, and then we're trying to back it up with anything they can find, and ignoring anything that disproves it.
Well, what both sides of that argument don't do is make a statement and then list the actual poll So the evidence for your own stupidity is right there.
They also do not include pictures of Princess Peach from Mario Brothers. And they don't create fun little graphs that show where money goes.
Okay, I might be for that. Creationism would be a lot more interesting if it was just random graphs and Mario Brother characters.
And just images of everything, yeah, and everyone. I mean, there must be like 300 images in this 80-page
document.
They're
everywhere.
I mean,
yeah,
they're,
yeah,
everywhere.
No,
yeah,
they're great. Actually, and on that front, I don't know if you've been, you probably have, because you're from Kentucky. Have you been to the Creation,
yes,
Museum?
Yes, I have.
I have several books. We'll talk about them later in the back there. But my favorite thing about them is that they're trying so hard, because now they've fallen on financial hardship, so they're trying so hard to really shift on the dragons thing. Like, they're like, you walk in there and it's like, it's all about dinosaurs. Like, that museum is just 100%, hey, dinosaurs are cool. And then they're trying really hard to shift the dragon thing now too. And like, I have a picture book about dragons and dinosaurs. It's great. But that's, yeah. But that, to me, that's their version of pictures. It's,
yeah,
like, hey, check it out, we've got dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, also this. And it's like,
it's like, it's just like those car ads. Come on down and get a car. We got plenty of toys for the kids.
Yeah.
Plenty of toys for the kids, mm-hmm, is what that is.
Yeah.
It's just come in and be distracted.
Yeah.
And then we're going to slip these little things.
The creation.
It's just like my comedy.
We got great toys for the kids. The Creation Museum billboard is a velociraptor, and then it just, mm-hmm, says, visit the Creation Museum. And it's like, that is not, I don't see the connection. Yeah. But all right.
And they are trying to prove that that they're right,
yeah,
with that.
Yeah.
Which is, it's fascinating.
Here's an interesting little passage from the book. This is on page 20, if you're following. Feminists,
those at home, turn to the page 20.
Feminists bombard society with sound bites like gender equality and social diversity. But beneath this facade of feel-good sentiments and moral posturing lies an ugly truth. Feminism conditions women to believe they unilaterally deserve what men have earned.
Earned, yeah.
Mm-hmm. As a result, women feel entitled to male authority, meaning to wield, women feel entitled to wield male authority. However, feminism fails to inform women about the heavy price that must be paid by those in authority positions. To women, leadership merely translates into the acquisition of personal benefits. Very interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Well, in the next sentence, sacrificing themselves to meet the needs of those under their care, even if it means forfeiting their lives, never even occurs to them.
Yeah. So basically he's saying that a woman expects to,
yeah,
get a man's job and do nothing.
Just,
yeah,
sit in that
and get
position.
All the benefits.
Well, and I especially love that sentence that I just read, because I'm going to read it again just so it sinks in for everybody listening at home. Sacrificing, so we're talking about, even in his perspective, we're talking about women who stay home and take care of the children in the house. Sacrificing themselves to meet the needs of those under their care, even if it means forfeiting their lives, never even occurs to them. Even in the most 1950s Leave It to Beaver idea of like a woman's place,
mm-hmm,
that is a ridiculous sentence.
Yeah.
That they don't understand what it means to take care of a person
and
over
sacrifice
their own needs.
Yeah, yeah.
Is insanity.
It's blindness.
Yeah.
It's blindness. If a woman wants to raise children and take care of the household and that whole thing, there's nothing wrong with that. But to say that she's not ready, willing, able, or even has the ability to see, that put someone else above her on, that's just such an incredibly blind statement. And the word earned is what,
mm-hmm,
stuck out in my mind,
yeah,
in,
yeah,
that paragraph.
Earned versus entitled.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
Women expect to be given everything and not have sex with us, and we're supposed to earn everything and then not have sex with women. that's the way this guy's thinking.
Also, in a good cycle, these paragraphs are the ones that are next to the picture of Princess Peach. Oh, from Mario.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, she's just doing this nice little like pirouette dance.
I literally had to go through, and because I didn't want to like kill my printer.
Right.
I deleted every single image before I printed this.
That ruins.
I hated it.
But I think if this book didn't have pictures, I don't know if I could have gotten through it.
That's,
the pictures really help. Also, another thing that I just have to say, I hated that he did. Because these paragraphs are directly below a large paragraph, he consistently quotes Alexis de Tocqueville, and it really upsets me. Like, he does it a lot, and it's like,
I know.
And it's like, in the way, some of the ones that he uses are directly about women, and then that one you just have to go, well, this is also a person that was alive in the 17 to 1800s.
Yeah.
The ones that are not about women are like about slavery or about democracy, because Tocqueville was very about individualism and democracy. Mm-hmm. So most of the quotes that he's using are about government systems and not women. And especially specifically about government. Mm-hmm. And he does that. The guy who wrote this book does that specifically as well, where he keeps comparing. In the last section that we read, where it's about fear versus terror and control, he keeps comparing a relationship between a man and a woman to your relationship with your federal government.
Yeah. Yes,
like how we don't think anything of speeding laws. Like, you have a fear of breaking the law, but that's normal. So why isn't it normal for a woman to have a fear of breaking your laws? And it's like,
yeah,
whoa.
And then he goes on to say that, and then that's the reason cops need to carry a gun.
Yeah,
because if you speed and they pull you over, why would you stop? Well, the cop has a gun. So in essence, is what he's saying is men need to arm themselves to get the booty.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know?
It's so...
When he was kept quoting Tocqueville, I was, and I'm by no means an expert on him.
Nor am
I. I read Democracy in America, and I kept thinking, wait a minute. Where did you get this?
Yeah.
So I actually spent a good 30 minutes reading, you know, different stuff, like trying to find these quotes where, and I was literally just putting the quote in the Google search and then coming and trying to find it. He's just pulling these random things.
In the
tailor it
in the movie online on YouTube, they include like 7 minutes of Bill Maher doing stand up. I don't know whether you guys have seen this particular bit. Bill Maher does a whole stand-up, like 7 minutes, on feminism. Have you guys seen it?
I have not.
I don't believe I have.
I'm curious.
It's really, really good and funny.
Uh-huh.
But he plays it in this video with this very dark, foreboding music under it. And it just kind of makes it seem like worse than it is. It kind of makes it appear that Bill Maher agrees with this guy, you know.
That's the reason I would be interested in seeing it. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
I don't know a whole lot, but Bill, do you know what religion Bill Maher is? Because he's.
I believe he's an atheist.
No, but he is an. But there's a very specific group that does. They might not even call themselves a religion, but he's a member of this very specific group. Which is, and I'm simplifying it, but it's basically that you are here to get everything to please yourself, and no matter who you need to hurt, or it doesn't matter if you like sex, you need to get as much sex as you can. And I've just read this about Bill Maher, that he's a member of this group.
Hedonism and Epicureanism; those are the two.
Yeah, and I hope I'm not wrong about that. Let me just state out loud that. I don't know this for. I've read something about it,
right.
Where Bill Maher was a member, blah. So, which is nothing like what this guy's saying, but you could bend it
right
to fit into this.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and that's exactly what
that's
they
what
do.
Happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also, I just want to say one of my other favorite, because we're talking about pictures and we're talking about the incentives, pleasure versus pain. He has a picture of Jeff Bridges receiving an Academy Award.
I know. And I kept waiting for him to mention something about this. But
I think it's just supposed to be a picture of an incentive. Like, if you're a good actor, you get an Academy Award.
Right.
That's your incentive to continue being a good actor.
Yeah.
So it's like the only reason Jeff Bridges is an actor is because he was once promised an Academy Award. And so he's like, well, I'm going to work for that then.
And Jeff Bridges represents the woman and the Academy is you, the man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, oh, and then my my other favorite, this is probably my definite favorite picture in this book, is under Pain Maintains Authority. That is the headline. It is the only picture in this section. It is a picture of a fake leg with a tennis shoe on and a cat inside of it. And it says, this is my ass-kicking leg.
Yeah.
It is the greatest thing.
And I'm pretty sure that both of you guys, Stuart and Cody, are going to be ordering that online pretty soon.
I would get that whole section as a poster just because the juxtaposition of that picture. So, like, literally, this is for the listeners at home that are not looking at the book right now, and really, why aren't you? At this point in the podcast, you should have already downloaded this book and be looking at these sections. So it is a literal lolcat picture of a cat and a fake leg, and it says, this is my ass-kicking leg. And then it is next to this paragraph. Once your authority is established, pain is required to maintain it. This doesn't mean you suddenly cut off the pleasure. It just means that the pleasure you provide must be conditional. It must be merited. You should give others pleasure to motivate them to move toward order. However, if those under your authority stop moving toward order, they will become disorderly. Thus, you need to apply pain to quell dysfunctional behavior. Pain causes those under your authority to fear your authority. That next to a picture of a cat and a fake leg. It is the greatest juxtaposition I have ever seen in my entire
absolutely
life.
Absolutely wonderful. And I would definitely, and I would blow up the picture and hang it on my wall, but there's restrictions on use at the beginning. So.
Yeah, I would have to then publish the rest of the book in a small font underneath the poster if I were to do this. I can't just take an excerpt and publish it. Oh my God!
Hey Cody, is it easy for you to find a website on there quickly
on here?
iPad?
Sure, yeah.
Can you go to? I don't know whether either of you guys found this. I did a little deep digging here.
Okay,
I found something called chickacademy.com. That's chick with a K, chick academy.com. It's like the female version of this, or it's like the version of this for females.
Huh? Got it.
But with the same principles, and the website looks exactly the same.
Like, oh my God!
Can you just read to us the categories, please?
Well, I'm also going to give you the article that is at the top is titled "Keep Your Man." So these are the sections: welcome, cooking, cleaning, conduct, cocksucking, quiet. Oh, and quiet has a picture of. Quiet has music. All of them have little pictures. This quiet has music, a hammer, duct tape, and a woman who has been punched in the face. Campus and about.
And can you go to the top of the page? They kind of worded them a little differently there.
Oh, yes, they did. at the top is cooking, cleaning, cocksucking, and shutting the fuck up.
Wow.
And underneath shutting the fuck up is a bra, a rainbow, and a cat.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
This is so great.
They created a whole separate website with the same philosophies, but it's for the women consumers.
Right.
Special thanks to Manhood Academy for all your loves.
And I'm assuming because if it's for the women, the writing is not as stellar as the men's because they're just too dumb.
In the Keep Your Man article, it says at the bottom, special thanks to Manhood Academy for all your love, support, and gigantic American penis.
Wow.
I'm gonna have to take a nap for a while, guys. I don't think I can keep going.
Isn't that one of the greatest things in the world?
This is man.
There's also welcome letter or whatever on the main page. It's supposedly written by like some lady professor.
Oh, yeah. It's warm regards, Miss Coolidge, which was the name of my third grade science teacher, PhD, and Dr. Priscilla Pink.
I'm starting to think that this whole thing is just complete.
Is it satire? Is that what you're thinking?
Greatest satire in the entire history of the world.
This made me. Where's this Pulitzer? Made me even think more. this seems satirical almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Know? Well, that's the problem that we live in today is it's hard to tell satire from non-satire anymore. Like, that's the Onion problem is people believe the Onion articles because we live in a world where it's possible.
Mm-hmm. Right.
My rhetoric professor, when she posts articles sometimes on Facebook, will title them not an Onion article because some of the real articles seem like it's actually a real... when the Pope recently said that he's no longer judging, like he is not a person that can judge homosexuals, the Onion... Borowitz wrote an article that was about Antonin Scalia offering to judge them for him. And my rhetoric professor posted it as... posted it under the title, again, completely plausible. Which I was like, yeah, I mean, that's actually a very plausible... I could definitely see Antonin Scalia going on record saying, I will judge homosexuals.
Sure.
Like, I could definitely see that.
So what do we think? Is this satire?
I don't think it's satire.
I don't think it is. I kind of think the Chick Academy might be. Satire by
not,
the same people.
If it's not directly... No, I think the Chick Academy one, if it is satire, is not by the same people. If it wasn't directly, because I can't imagine them having, because the problem is if the Manhood Academy thing is real and the Chick Academy is satire, that means that they have presence enough of mind to realize that they are ridiculous. And I don't think they do if it's real.
And also a phrase like big American penis or huge American, whatever that was, he doesn't really ever do anything like that from, you know, he'll say like cock sucking. Which,
but, well, that's one of the sections of the
right,
Chick.
Yeah. But that little quip about big American penis, that just seemed like not keeping in line with the tone of this whole thing. I mean, obviously, he doesn't have a big American penis.
The sad part about this is that we are now so well versed in the Manhood Academy.
Mm-hmm.
That we are like conjecturing about style of,
like, well, it's
we're like those scholars being like, did Shakespeare write this thing?
It's not, not satire, but it's definitely intended as like an inside joke. Like
okay,
it definitely
okay,
is because
yeah.
like okay, because this is the about section. Prior to her appointment as headmistress at Stonk Beaches Preparatory in September 2010, Miss Coolidge was first deputy headmistress of St. Slapahoe High School for Girls.
Okay,
a position she held since 2005, having joined the school in 2000. Miss Coolidge holds degrees in ancient and medieval knitting from Tight Buns University and in Shutting the Fuck Up from the University of Bitch Keep It Down Before I Get My Fucking Shoe.
Oh,
she also
yeah.
has her MA in Bitch Management from the Ticonderoga Backhand University. Miss Coolidge is passionate about education, is committed to ensuring innovative and dynamic teaching and learning that develops each girl to the very best of her abilities. And then there's more. Oh, she enjoys swimming, reading, gardening, sucking cock, wine tasting, cleaning the toilet, and baking cookies.
Okay, so the question now is Manhood 101 a joke?
I don't think so.
Okay. I don't think so.
So the chick version, 101.
If it is, there's guys paying $5 a month to be members of it.
Yeah, no, because I
kind
went,
of the butt of the joke.
Because here's the thing: I went through the message board, and there's no way.
Okay.
There's no way that the Manhood Academy is fake.
It's real.
Because I've gone through that message board quite a lot when I was doing, like when I was looking at this book.
Uh-huh.
And there's just, it's too real. And there's too much going on for it to be a joke like that. And like, and especially because it has the telltale signs of that kind of, because I've had experience with these kinds of places before in terms of like white power stuff and stuff like that. To clarify for the people listening, not that I am members of white power organizations, but because I do a lot of rhetorical weird research, as we've discussed previously on the podcast. For those of you just tuning into this part of the podcast,
you have to be a strong male to be in white power. You cannot be a woman.
No, yeah. And there's but it has the telltale signs of like people. Like, in some of the message boards, there would be, like, one guy who would just post several things in a row. And that's, like, a telltale sign of, like, a guy who is sitting at home, has, like, off time, and he, in his free time, goes to Manhood Academy and then just, like, vents about shit.
Vents, yeah.
You know, and that, because that's what it is. The message boards are literally just, these are men who are venting about women not not being nice.
Right.
To him.
I gave a homeless woman $1 and she didn't suck my dick.
Exactly. Right. So this seems like an in joke. Like this, okay, that's so what this seems like, is that the guy who made Manhood Academy created this as like a joke for guys to give women, because I think they're also present enough of mind to know that women aren't going to get on board. So it's not like they're going to actually think that women are going to come to this site and go, oh, this is how I do all of this. I think this is literally just an in joke.
I was thinking maybe it's some women just making it as kind of a joke retort.
That is possible, because like the thing is that the connections to the Manhood Academy are only like that they say thanks to the Manhood Academy, you know. So there's
and they use pretty much the exact same style. Like the website looks very similar.
Okay,
right,
which is possible
like
to do
the same.
Right?
Yeah, did you mimic it?
Find it through Manhood Academy? That's the real question. Does Manhood Academy link to it?
But they mentioned it somewhere, but it was not prominent. But
okay,
I think I was looking through their news feed or something, and somewhere I saw
if Manhood Academy
this
mentions
new thing,
it.
Yeah, they mentioned it.
So if they mention it, then it seems connected. Yeah. If it were a separate thing that just kept mentioning Manhood Academy, then I could see that as maybe being a response. The other thing I would say is that it is also made in 2012, according to the bottom, which is when Manhood Academy, the principles that we're reading, was also written in 2012. Mm.
Okay. Can you read the name of that university again? No, the other one, the shutting up.
Oh no, that was what her major was.
Can you just read that? I need to hear that sentence again.
I need to get back to it.
Okay.
She holds degrees in ancient and medieval knitting from Tight Buns University. And in shutting the fuck up from the University of Bitch, keep it down before I get my fucking shoe. Is that it?
That was pretty much the greatest line of a bio that I've ever seen.
She also has her MA in bitch management from the Ticonderoga Backhand University.
I think I'm just going to make my bio be that.
Yeah.
I'm definitely putting my high school on Facebook as St. Slapahoe High School for Girls. I will say that much. I was the one dance student that they had for the recitals because they needed a man for Swan Lake, and so they let me in. I'm definitely putting that in. I don't even know who Saint Slapahoe would be. What is that? Eastern Orthodox or Catholic? I don't know what that sainthood process
was.
The
fact that we are actually trying to figure out if the girl, the female version of the website, the male version of the website, we're actually literally discussing, are they both a joke? Is one a joke? That should tell you how wonderful this place is. It's well worth $5.
Hey, this is less than the cost of a cup of coffee at Starbucks each month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the whole month.
Although I would be worried about paying them money. I don't know if I really want to give them money to fund anything.
Yeah.
That is the only thing that concerns me. I will say, though, in one of the message boards, they had a thing that was feminist myth, feminist reality. And it was like, it was a picture of Wonder Woman, then it was a picture of like a really overweight woman in a superhero outfit. Mm-hmm. And it was a recurring theme where they would show articles of like women trying to be like there was one that was about a woman who entered the military or something. And then the feminist reality was then the article about her being killed in combat.
Oh,
and about how
man.
She like, and then that proves that women shouldn't be in the military.
Right. Oh.
There was one about a woman who wanted to be a police officer, and she lived in a border town in Mexico, and she was tired of all of the crime, and so she tried to get together a group of women because there were like, I think there were no police in the town because of all of the crime and drug stuff.
Yeah.
So she created a group of women that had no weapons, and they were going to try and like nonviolently solve the problems. Mm-hmm. Then she had to escape to America because cartels kept threatening her family. And then they posted that under feminist myth versus feminist reality.
Oh, jeez.
Because she was too a coward, and because she didn't want to use weapons and also was unable physically or mentally to do the job. But then another one that they posted was an article about women inventors. It was just an article about like a woman inventing something.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was even from a women-centric website. So of course they would target it as like a woman invention. And then this is part of what I was talking about. this is part of a one person who was called the professor just posting a bunch of stuff in a row.
Okay.
And then they all just started ranting about how, yeah, typical women talking about, oh, female inventor, even though men are inventing stuff all the time. And it was just like, it was such a, yeah, like, the, and they were just like, yeah. And it was like, talking about women doing something that a man can easily do and that kind of a thing. It was right. Just, yeah. Message board was a fun place to get lost in.
Let me throw this out there and see if we can incite some people. This is a theory that I've been thinking about for a while. I have stopped calling myself a feminist because I believe the term is past its usage, and meaning that at one point we needed the whole movement. We needed this. But we humans do not name the norm. We name the abnormal, you know. So once the majority of the people agree that men and women it should be equality, then feminism is a dead word. Then you need to name the abnormal, which is this shit that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
So just keeping the word feminism in the culture is actually kind of hurting it. I think we ought to just start, instead of saying I'm a feminist, well, we're all feminists, the majority. It's this small percentage over here, like this guy. We need to name them.
Right. I agree and I disagree. I agree with the theory and the hypothesis. What I disagree with is the majority. And because like this is definitely a minority, this level, like we've discussed, that is definitely a minority. And like you said, the clinking of the ice cubes in the glass is not as right. bad as this. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't say that the majority of people truly believe, like, I mean, we're talking about a culture that still has problems with with men thinking that they deserve sex with a woman who, you know, like we have plenty of cases that keep happening involving rape, where the media treats it as like, well, she was scantily clad. Like that, like there are tons of clips of newscasters talking about how a woman was scantily clad, so was it really the fault of the rapist that he raped her?
I guess I'm not paying attention to that because I just do. I mean, I meet rednecks constantly, all right. the time in bars that
right.
yell at me and try to beat me up and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, that's a smaller percentage. In my mind.
Right. Well, I think a lot, and I think the thing is that it, because we're at that point now where it's like, it's on very specific things. Because like, you're not going to find, you're right in that the majority isn't like this. And you're right in that the majority isn't thinking that women can't hold jobs. Like, the majority of men, I would argue, without statistics backing me up whatsoever, that the majority of men do believe that women should be allowed to work, at least. I would even maybe go so far as to postulate that most men think that women should, but there are still a large amount of men that believe that women should stay home, that that's their role in the family unit. But I would also argue that because it's more on specific things like rape culture or in those really niche kind of, or very fine-tuned arguments where it's like, well, yeah, I think women should be allowed. In the same way I said with gay marriage earlier, there are people who are going to say things like, oh, yeah, I think women should be allowed to have jobs, but I personally will only marry a woman who wants to stay home and with the kids because that's what I'm looking for in a woman. In the same way of like, oh, I think gays should be allowed to get married, but I personally don't think it's an okay thing to do.
If a man is looking for a woman who wants to stay home and raise the kids, he could still be a feminist.
Right, right, right. I mean, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that.
Right.
Right. But what I'm saying is that it's a quieter thing. And so I think that's why it's not completely out there. But I don't know. Because I'm from Texas, and so we just went through that whole bill thing with Wendy Davis doing the filibuster and everything.
Right. Do you think that, and this is just a thought I've been, do you think that adjusting the, because language is important, I think.
Right.
Everyday usage of language is important.
Completely agree.
So do you think that if, hypothetically, if we remove the word feminist, feminism, from the society and had a word, redneck, backward, whatever we want to label this group that we're talking about that believes women are inferior, women should not, do you believe it would speed up the equality?
I don't think so. Because then, to say that it would speed up or increase equality, you'd have to argue that something that I think we could all agree is still a problem, not as big a problem as it used to be, mm-hmm. in America, at least. You'd have to argue that a problem is going to get better by, like, focusing your attention away from it, which I don't think...
We're still in the period of where we need the resistance.
Well, I would...
Go ahead.
I would separate the question, I don't think it needs to be said, but I'm going to say it just because I know that there's probably at least a couple people listening right now. I am very aware that we are three men talking about feminism, I hope that you all understand that we're doing it from a place of understanding. But
reading this book,
yeah.
And then talking about it from another angle.
Right, yeah. Right, yeah. But I just wanted to make that clear.
Actually, I'm an expert on feminism, Cody. Yeah, so, yeah. You know,
look,
no
I'm
disclaimers.
I'm a gay man. I'm a gay man, so I'm basically a woman, according to this book. So it works out. I would separate the question because from a rhetorical standpoint, othering people is never a good thing. Because you were saying... getting rid of the word feminism and then focusing on these people being backward. Mm-hmm. The problem is that you see that with racism, people mm-hmm. start becoming proud of being racist because they yeah. see it as a identifying factor of this is my community. In the same way of like the South will rise again kind of mentality,
right.
Where because they start seeing themselves as being oppressed by the North, and then they get to then feel like they're an underdog band of brothers kind of thing.
And then it could actually build it.
Exactly. So you're going to get people who will then become prouder of being, quote unquote, backwards because they right. start getting angry. Especially because we're also talking about the type of person that would be more likely to become angry when told they're wrong.
Right.
They're going to start identifying more with that. And then that becomes, I mean, that's kind of what the Tea Party movement has become. It's a group of people who feel like they shouldn't be told that they shouldn't think that, like, Obama is a Muslim and from Kenya. And the mm-hmm. more you call them ignorant, they go, you can't call me ignorant. I'll show you ignorance, you know, and then they start becoming angrier and then more charged to try and prove you wrong, even though they are themselves wrong.
So language changes with time
mm.
and people.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're talking about is eventually, in my opinion, you know, there will be no need for the word feminism, feminist, whatever. That as a thing would just...
Right. You know, well, in the same way that abolitionist is no longer a word that we use.
At one point in our country, abolitionist was a insightful... I mean, it riled people up on both sides.
Right.
But now most people don't even know the word, you know?
Right.
We don't need the word anymore. And at one point, I think it will become that. But to force it to get there is probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, it's a thing that changes with time.
I don't even know is feminism as a concept, is that really kind of a purely American thing? I really don't know the
answer
to that.
That's a good question.
I actually don't know specifically or even that in English speaking countries thing, because I know Britain has a feminism aspect going on, because I mean that was the whole Margaret Thatcher thing. That was the only positive thing I'll ever say about Margaret Thatcher. But because there kind of is, but then it's also, is that a westernization thing? Because, like, you know, you've got some cultures, in like the Middle East where they're kind of experiencing some sort of feminist movement, but then it's like, well, is that because they're seeing American media, and then that's, is it homegrown or is it influenced? But then is that a bad thing if it's influenced? Maybe they're experiencing another culture, not to reference your material directly at you, Stuart, but in the, but your, I mean, your summation of your material is, who are we to say, because we've invented this idea, that somebody else's invention of their idea is incorrect? So they, like with the tribes, they're seeing another culture's society. So who's to say that it's wrong that they then decide that they want to adopt that other culture's
society? Well, you could argue that all progress is, there's a word for this in anthropology, and I can't remember it right now. But, you know, throughout history, the tribes, the cultures, the whatever you want to call it, that have interaction with more people and more diverse people, they progress faster.
Right.
You know, if you're in a seaport, then, you know, that's the way it works.
Right.
And the internet is just speeding that up.
Right. You want more interchange of ideas and everything. Because that's the other thing is also... That's one of the problems I have with the internet on the other side is people start getting into echo chambers real easy on the internet, and you need someone to hit your ideas, if only just to solidify your ideas.
Yeah.
Because how do you know you're right unless you have somebody arguing against you? Like, this guy's probably never had anybody he really listened to debate him on anything he said in this book.
No, he's never left his apartment.
Right. Right, and that's the problem. And I like, because I used to do political comm for a little bit back in college when I was idealistic and thought that I wanted to work in politics before I fell apart on that. But I went to a conference that was on political communication in Austin, and they talked a lot about echo chambers. Because I mean, that's the problem is, like, you have people who watch Fox News, listen to right wing radio, and they only go on these particular websites, so all of their information is being filtered, and they're not actively engaging or even allowing the opposing opinion or any other facts or opinions to come in.
Yeah, and to be fair, you have people doing the same thing with MSNBC.
Oh,
and,
true. Yeah, on the liberal side as well. Yeah.
In fact, I find myself doing that. So, and I think,
I do that too sometimes.
And
as well.
I think, you know what? I haven't watched anything on Fox in like 2 months.
Yeah,
right.
I'm going to do that. You know,
I've started doing that a lot in the last few years. I listen because I drive a lot. Being a road comic, I listen to the percentage is probably somewhere around 20% of my time in the car listening to something besides audiobooks is Christian radio.
Yeah,
I listen to a lot of Christian radio. I'm interested in hearing all the sides, and what I've found is it really narrows and zeroes in on what I really think. You know, and then even when someone says something and I say, never thought about that in my entire life, then it opens up some other part, you know, then I might not agree with them, but it opened up something.
Right.
You know,
right. Yeah. I used to listen to right wing radio a lot. I used to wake up every morning and watch the 700 Club. Pat Robertson show.
Right.
I used to watch that all the time. That's a hard one to get through for me, especially.
He's still doing it, isn't he?
Yeah, he's still.
Isn't he like 100 now?
And he's also just getting worse. Like, it gets a lot more. Like, he just every week will say something that is just like, what? Like the Haitians made a deal with the devil, and that's why they had a natural disaster. That was a good one.
But you know, the longer he goes, the more he might be right. If this guy makes it to 300,
he's the next King Solomon, and we've got to worry about it. But yeah, and that's the thing is, like, I tend to get in my own echo chamber as well. For me, it's hard, and that's something I always try to talk to with, like, especially with like straight white males, even if they are liberal, is it's hard for me in a modern political climate to engage with right-wing Republicans a lot of the time, because for them it's about politics, and for me, you literally, I've told this story several times and on this podcast about my radio co-host who called me a pedophile. You know, for you it's political gaming. For me, I've just been called a pedophile.
Right.
Like, politics gets really personal when you're gay or when you're a minority or when you're a woman really easy. Like the whole thing in Texas. They're looking at it as the Republicans, for the most part, and a lot of them are religious, and they're looking at it as like you're trying to destroy our religions. But a lot of them are looking at it as we're not going to let these liberals get something that they want because they're Republicans and they're just trying to think of the political party. Yeah. But then women on the other side are going, you're removing our ability to live in some capacities. You're keeping a woman from West Texas because she has to, if she wants to get an abortion now, she has to try to get her work to let her take off for it and then drive like 2 days round trip to get an abortion. She mm-hmm. has to lose 2 days of wages if her work will let her, which mm-hmm. most people probably not, especially in lower income families. And just to have what is considered an American right.
Yeah.
Because we've gone through this before. So that's the problem, is it gets really personal these days because we're dealing... Because back in the old days, it was mostly because everybody was kind of agreed on horrible social standards. But now that we're actually flipping a lot of the social standards and trying to better that side of it, because mm-hmm. it's really easy to not care that much about, you know, the economic side of it. Like, I can argue with somebody about that and then go, okay, well, we just have two different opinions on the way federal banking should work, you know, or stock market regulation. I can get passionate about it, but at the end of the day, I'll go, okay, but I'll, you know, I just see that you and I see different opinions on it.
And I'll see it for lunch tomorrow.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah. But yeah, but no. I want to get married to the man that I love, and you go, no, you both need to die in a pit of fire.
See you for lunch tomorrow.
Yeah, it's hard to then go, all right, I concede your point. You and I are just looking at it from different angles, you know? Like there are people who literally think that I should be killed, and it's hard to then talk to them.
Really?
Yeah. Like,
come
I had
on,
a,
Cody.
Like,
I think that's your fault, Cody. That's all you,
my,
buddy.
Well, like, my favorite heckle that I've talked about on this podcast, I think, before, is when I was doing a stand-up show in Wrigleyville, and I said, so I'm gay, and somebody yelled out, kill yourself. And I said, well, I would, but that'd be considered a hate crime.
Yeah, wonderful.
But it's like, wonderful. But it's like, he and I aren't going to have a conversation after the show. Like, I'm not going to talk to that guy.
Right.
Like, seriously, because he wants me to literally kill myself.
Yeah. My favorite heckle, I'll just throw this in there. My favorite heckle. That's a great one. The one Cody just says is a great one. I was working on a bit about what you referenced before. I have a bit about learned behavior mm-hmm. is basically what it's about, and how everything is created within pockets, and then we judge each other when we made it up. And that, so within the bit, I say we made the calendar up, and I explain this to the audience by, you know, a memory of a teacher where I asked a question. Okay, so then. And at one point I was saying on stage, my teacher says to me, the Aztec calendar is actually more accurate than ours. And then I say, as a student, why aren't we using theirs? Guy in the crowd yelled out, because we're not fucking commies.
Because everybody knows the strong link between communism and the Aztecs.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, man.
Yeah. They built their pyramids in unity, and everybody enjoyed them. It was,
well, Lenin was, well, a huge fan of the Aztecs.
I believe it was, I believe it was Comrade Quetzalcoatl who said. Oh, man.
Well, I personally, going back to what you said, Cody, I do not believe, and this is the way I view it, but I do not believe that gay marriage is a political issue. I believe it's a freedom issue.
Right.
And I think that a lot of that stuff, you know, it gets personal, and people start attacking groups, you know, when mm-hmm. That's not a political issue to me.
Right.
At all. It never right. should have been.
Right. The idea that the compromise that we've come to is let the states vote on it, to me, is a weird compromise. Because mm-hmm. it's not an issue that should be voted on.
Mm-hmm. No.
And it makes no sense to me that that seems to be the acceptable solution to everybody is, oh, yeah, we'll just let everybody vote. That's like saying, like, oh, well, we'll, like, not to take it reducto ad absurdum, but it's just like, well, then might as well just be like that'd be like in the past if they'd been like, well, we'll let the states vote on whether we should have all of the homosexuals wrangled up and killed. You know, because it's like, well, you know, we'll just because, you know, because people have this strong opinion about homosexuality being immoral. And the Bible does say if you lie with a man, you should be put to death. So to compromise, we'll let the states decide individually whether you should kill everybody, whether homosexuals should be able to be legally killed or not.
It doesn't say anything about standing up in the shower, though. I want to point that out. It says nothing. I just want that to be stated.
For the record, everybody.
Let the record reflect.
Well, I think, you know, this is going back to the feminism, manhood 101. Eventually, I've never met, you know what? I take that back.
We don't even know what you're taking back.
I can't wait to hear.
I was about to say, I've never met anybody who is... who still believes that black and white children should not be in the same school together.
Oh, and I've definitely met somebody.
I have. Yeah, I just remembered. I have met somebody. Mm-hmm. But it's such a rarity.
Yeah.
It's so tiny.
Right.
It's just about gone, you know? And mm-hmm. It will be gone, you know? And the fact that you have shows like Mad Men, I mean, that show's popularity is the fact that that behavior is odd
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
So that just shows us it is disappearing.
Right.
And it will eventually be gone, you know? And there will be no need for the word feminism. Eventually, homosexuals will be allowed to be married. That intense hatred is disappearing. It's getting smaller and smaller, and it will be gone. And then we will have to find another group to hate.
That was my... when I was in college and Obama was elected on the same night that Prop 8 was voted in California, I was having like basically like a nervous breakdown because I was like, I don't understand how we can make progress on one side and then remove this from gay people. And I mean, mm-hmm. like, and I was at the University of Texas, I had people yell a faggot at me every once in a while and stuff like that. I've had some weird shit. So. Mm-hmm. It was just one of those things where it's like every once in a while it gets compounded on me. That's why I don't read gay news anymore, because every once in a while it like the whole idea that there are people out there who actively just hate that I'm alive gets really like hard to deal with sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was one of those times my rhetoric professor at that time, this is a different rhetoric professor, he said you just have to wait. Society always moves towards equality and liberty and freedom. It just sometimes trips backwards a little bit, and it sometimes is slower than it should be, but it always moves forward. And that was the only reason I celebrated when Obama came out in favor of gay marriage that one time. I knew it was like a stupid little thing, and I knew that it really didn't mean that much in the grand scheme, but just that we now had a president who's explicitly said it, that was a step. Like DOMA, when DOMA got repealed, anybody who really knows what that means knows that it means very little in the grand scheme. But what it does mean is it means that, you know, a gay person's not going to be kicked out of the country because his visa expires because his marriage isn't really legal.
Right.
And it means that military benefits and things like that matter now. And so it's a small step forward. And so it's just like you just have to focus on that.
And the word, the most important word in that is forward.
Yeah.
Not small. You know, I'd rather... be big, giant leaps but for some reason, human beings take forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just takes forever. But I personally, that's the reason I'm such a positive comedian. I actually believe that what I consider just a basic truth, equality,
mm-hmm.
we're heading towards it, and we always have been.
Right.
I believe that.
Right.
I'm going to tell a story, if you guys don't mind.
No, of course.
Great.
In direct... hatred and anger towards manhood 101.
Okay.
I'm going to tell a story that I love. And, well, let's just say it this way. This is a fuck you to manhood 101 right here. Okay. And I'm not good with dates. I don't remember numbers that well. So 1600, I don't remember 30. Let's mm-hmm. go there. We're, you know, Anne Hutchinson was a Puritan. She was born in England, her and her family. Do you know Anne Hutchinson's mm-hmm. story? Okay.
I don't.
Okay, I'm going to just give a basic story because this is so powerful of a story to me.
Right.
You know, Anne Hutchinson, born in England. She grew up Puritan. She can actually read. Her father demanded that she learned how to read so she could read the Bible. So we're talking in an age where women, you want to talk about the, you know, homosexual and all this thing, women were, it was really, they looked at it as, why would you teach a woman to read?
Right.
There's no reason to.
Right.
Well, her father wanted her to read the Bible. And then she went on and started reading other books. She really enjoyed it. And she married a man. They were Puritan. And they came over in the Great Puritan Migration. They settled in Boston. She's a midwife. And apparently very good with distracting women from the pain by her amazing storytelling, her amazing orator skills, and just, you know, and she's very good at that, you know. Mm-hmm. She starts having people over for dinner that are just, and she's basically, they have a dinner, and then she's talking and telling stories from the Bible, talking about, and stories from her childhood, and also her opinions, which is where we're headed. The dinners grow to 100, 150 people she's having, feeding all these people, and then basically preaching.
Mm-hmm.
But she's preaching nonviolence towards the Indians, 1630-ish, equality for men and women, equal rights. This is some really, so the rich white men in the town just cannot have this. They take her to court in Boston. The judge is also the jury and the prosecution. Mm. So she has very little chance of pulling this out. But according to the newspaper articles, which they extensive newspaper coverage of this, because she was a popular female in the, I mean, she was known in New York and everywhere, you know, just from her talks after dinner. She bested the judge in all counts. She was funny. She was killing, guys. Comics, no. She was killing. The courthouse was packed because she was a popular woman, and she was getting big laughs. She was taking his words and twisting them around and showing him the hypocrisy of what he was saying. You know, he kept saying things like, for someone of your gender, things like that. And she was flipping that on him. She still found guilty, but she destroyed him, you know, in a debate, destroyed him. They wanted to kill her, but she was too popular. So they banned this woman from Boston. She moves to New York with her family, and 20 families go with her. That's how powerful she was. Yeah, 20 families decide to go. The white rich men of the town, judges, governor, they have a meeting and say, this cannot happen. We cannot allow a woman to get this much traction.
Right.
So they pulled money together and they opened a university to stop it, which is now Harvard.
Whoa.
And in the charter of Harvard, it actually says, you know, that we shall educate the judges, the politicians, the governors to assure against future Hutchinsons.
Really?
Yeah. Now tell me.
Whoa.
Versus Manhood 101. This is a story about a woman that anybody can use in their lives, you know. Powerful woman stood up. I mean, it's tiny. You know, you're a woman in that age.
Yeah.
I mean, that, you want to talk about being the tiniest little insignificant. And she stood up and said nonviolence towards Indians, equality for everybody, and all this stuff. I mean,
that's great.
That's a great story.
I thought it would be good to tell on the podcast.
Yeah.
I think that's a great way to end it, actually.
Well, let me throw in a quick reaction to that, which is it reminds me of an old movie I saw. Mm-hmm. Either of you guys seen the movie The Passion of Joan of Arc?
I'm aware of it.
Okay, it was made in, like, I think the 30s, a silent movie, something 30s maybe. And it's a reenactment, basically, of the trial of Joan of Arc and her execution. But they actually used transcripts from the actual trial as dialogue. And it's astounding because it so reminded me of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Again, powerful female person, you know, real story, who totally whipped everyone's ass in the trial, and yet, you know, we all know what happened. Worth watching. But that was a great story. I've never heard of Anne Hutchinson, actually.
Do you want me to tell the ending of the story just to cap it out?
Great.
And this, sometimes I leave off the ending because it's kind of sad, but it is powerful in its own way. She moved to what is now Brooklyn, mm-hmm. and 20 families went with her. And the Dutch were, you know, mainly in Brooklyn. They allowed her to move, and everybody knew about her, you know. And there was an Indian tribe that had been warring with the Dutch. So the Dutch put her, they made her live in between. So they basically had her as a buffer.
Mm-hmm.
And the Indians attacked and killed Anne Hutchinson and killed everybody. She had one daughter that was out picking berries or something who survived the attack and actually ended up living with the Indians for 18 years, until she was 18 at least, not 18 years. But the chief that attacked, he knew her. And it was common to take the name of your most powerful enemy. So he was Chief Hutchinson. He took her name.
Wow.
And then they named a river. The Indians named the Hutchinson River. Mm-hmm. That is the Hutchinson Parkway that you drive on in New York. It's still called Hutchinson Parkway. They named it after.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, as a white, straight man, I find it hard to stand on stage and speak from my heart. And then you want to talk about if I was a homosexual man, mm-hmm. a black man, mm-hmm. and then a woman, and then you want to move it back to 16-something, tell me you can't stand up and say what you really believe.
Yeah.
You know, it's an insult to Anne Hutchinson every time you don't say what you believe, you know?
So we need to watch the Joan of Arc movie. What's it called again?
The Passion of Joan of Arc.
The Passion of Joan
of
Arc. I
definitely want to see that.
Everybody needs to buy a biography on Anne Hutchinson. Everybody needs to watch the Manhood Academy video.
Yeah, that's right.
That was previously discussed.
By the way, yes. look for the version of The Passion of Joan of Arc online where some rock band that I'd never heard of composed, because it's a silent movie, they composed an entire score for the whole movie, and it's really cool as hell. You have heard about this?
I have seen, because I'm a junk guy, and I buy records. I've seen, it's on album. It's on vinyl.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I forget the name of the band, though.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't remember, because I never bought it, because I would see it, and I would go, what is this, you know? And then I would just not buy it, but now I'm definitely buying it.
It's tremendous. The soundtrack is tremendous. Yeah.
Wow.
I'll check that out.
I like leaving with homework.
I think we've all got homework for this one.
Yeah.
We do.
Oh, man. This is fun.
Definitely.
Stuart, I hope
you
enjoyed
having
it.
Me.
Yeah, no, thank you for coming.
Yeah,
it was great. Again, Stuart, this is going to come out at the end of August. Do you have anything? Or do you have anything you want to direct people to? I assume your CD, probably?
I will be doing a one-man show at the end of August. So, yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, my new CD, we could say that. It's on iTunes. It's called I Don't Think I Believe Us.
Yeah, and it's great. I've listened to it 3 times now.
Oh, thank you.
It's fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, seriously. And if anybody, and what's your website? For people,
StuartHuff.com. By the time this comes out, it will be revamped. I'm having it rebuilt right now.
Great.
Yeah. By the time it comes out, it should be ready.
Yeah. If you, I think Renja will agree with me. If you have the opportunity to see Stuart live in any capacity, you can. I would not even highly recommend it. I would compel you to.
Yes.
If I may use fear to create order, you
not
must.
Terror.
No, not terror.
Fear.
But I have a sword in my apartment, and I'm telling you, you must go see Stuart Huff live.
Go see Stuart Huff live, and come over here and suck this cock. Okay.
All right, and this has been Tomfoolery. I, of course, am Cody Melcher.
I'm Ranjit Sowry, and our guest has been Stuart Huff. Thank you again, Stuart.
Thanks for having me,
Thank you. And remember, guys, pros before hoes, which sounds terrible in this context.
Pros before slap-a-hoe.